Hello, and welcome to NDTnow.com's podcast game, exploring topics in NDT which affect your business. Today's podcast is brought to you by SureHand, the self-service hiring platform that instantly matches industrial employers with verified tradespeople. Today's topic is the new ASNT Employer-Based Certification Audit Program. There have always been questions about why ASNT does not more closely monitor proper compliance with their recommended practice, S&T TC1A. On their website, ASNT writes, "In the last 5 years, there has been renewed conversations in the policing of certification programs that embrace S&T TC1A and CP189 from industry, manufacturers, partners, members, and certification holders. In response, the ASNT Employer-Based Certification Program was born. Its purpose, to provide the NDT industry with a registry program that ensures NDT service providers and inspection agencies meet the minimum requirement, the minimum compliance requirements with either S&T TC1A or CP189 through the employer's written practice." Joining us today is Mike Ruddy, who spearheaded this initiative as a volunteer with ASNT. Mike is the Director of Quality Technical Services at NOV Tuboscope. He has been in the industry for 41 years and is an ASNT NDT Level 3 and 5 methods. He has headed the TC1A committee since the 2011 edition and has served ASNT and the NDT industry as a volunteer in various different ways for the last 3 decades. Mike, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Mary Beth.
So we'll get right into it. We understand that you were instrumental in getting this new audit program off the ground. Can you tell us more about the program, your role, and why it's necessary?
Yeah, this, as you mentioned in your intro, the question about why ASNT doesn't police these standards is an old one. It's been around for decades. And in conversation with colleagues in the past, I've brought it up and kind of a lukewarm response. How do you audit to a recommended practice? Which is a good question. But I continue to think about it. And in conversation with a past chairperson of the board, Kevin Smith, he really liked the idea. So we talked about it some more. And then he asked if I would present something to the board on this to see if we could move this forward. And so I did that. I presented it to the board in early 2017, and they liked what they heard from me. Got a very warm response and then a charge to develop it a little bit further. So I created an ad hoc committee, which was with Mr. Culbertson and Mr. Mackin and myself. And we gave 2 or 3 more presentations to the board throughout the rest of that year. And then it kind of went from there. And since about mid-2018, staff has been the primary driver in it. And we've got a fully developed program now with 5 beta audits, either totally completed or in some percentage of being completed soon. And we've issued our first registration in October. So my role is, we also created the ad hoc committee, kind of morphed into a subcommittee, and we're placed underneath the standards development committee that reports to the board. And so I'm chairing that volunteer committee for a period of time yet to be determined, but until we get our legs underneath us and the program gets going. Also, as you mentioned previously, the need to police it. In recent years, kind of a different thing has arose, and that's with training certificates in particular. We've seen a lot of examples of training certificates being issued by training agencies globally, and some of the nomenclature that's on those certificates is at least questionable, sometimes difficult to interpret what they really mean based on what they're saying. It can even be said that in some cases, they even use the ASNT logo, and it seems like it's a certification. It doesn't necessarily even reference the employer's written practice, but yet has ASNT on it. So it's a little bit confusing. So that's a big reason why. Another reason why is that many of the folks in the industry that have done many of these audits, such as myself, realize that implementation and having a proper written practice sometimes just aren't there. And so this takes care of that. This is what we focus on, those particular aspects.
That sounds great. And yeah, I mean, I used to do audits as well. And what's supposed to be in the written practice is often missing or lacking or just inadequate to provide.
Or verbatim what says in TC1A.
For sure.
Yeah.
So, well, can you explain a little bit about the scope of these audits?
Yeah, it's pretty simple and straightforward. The audit has two parts, once you've applied and so forth. But the very first part that we look at is we request a copy of the written practice, and that's assigned to an auditor, and the auditor does what's called a desktop audit. So he's basically just confirming using a checklist that we've developed that the written practice is written and for the most part complies with the requirements of either SNT TC1A or CP189, and that also is by edition, year edition, so they can specify which edition they want to be in compliance with. And then if there's any non-conformances or findings associated with that review, those are issued along with a report back to the client, and they're given a period of time to respond to those successfully and perhaps make any tweaks to their written practice that might be required and so forth. And then at that point, we used to call it the on-site audit is scheduled. On-site audit is still an option, but the next phase of it would be to actually review the program as it's implemented at the company. So, everything from looking at personnel files to the various aspects of qualification for a given individual for a given method. And we've got a sampling plan in place based on the size of the organization and how many locations they want audited to determine how much time we spend looking at these files. And then once the on-site audit, if you will, is completed, similar process, a report's written. If there's any findings, those NCRs are issued. And the client's given, I think, a 60-day period to respond to those and close them out. And then at that point, the packet, if you will, the audit package is presented to a 3-person program panel, which is made up of other members of the volunteer committee at this point. Eventually, they will be certified auditors themselves that would be independently reviewing this and rendering a decision to accept or reject the report. So not only is it independent oversight, but it's independent review. So it's not just the auditor's opinion and what he saw and read, but it's concurrence of that by like-minded and like qualified individuals.
Excellent. And I did see that AS&T has a really good flowchart of the whole process at, if you guys are interested, it's at asnt.org/EBC. And that's for employer-based certification. So if you guys are interested, definitely go there and you can see the full flowchart of the process.
Can I add one more point?
Sure.
I just want to make it clear, too, that back to the question about the scope, the parts of the system that we're looking at, it's basically documentation. It's training records. It's examinations. It's a person's educational background, experience records, things that are the pieces of the qualification process. So as one gets trained and examined and gains experience as a certified level 2, for example, they reach a point where they've met all of the qualification requirements, can then be certified. That's the area that we're focusing in. We're not watching training classes being held, or we're not watching a practical exam being administered, or a written exam for that matter. We're just looking at the content.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Basically what you would do in a normal audit if you were auditing one of your vendors.
Correct.
So when you were talking about the scope, you did mention on-site. So one of the questions that came up was, can you explain what the audit process looks like right now in light of the COVID situation?
Yes, we had, when COVID hit, we had 5 beta audits in the hopper. And we had done on-site for 3 of those, I believe, and the other 2 were still pending, you know, application review and some other things. So when COVID hit, we basically stopped the presses. You know, nothing happened for a bit, just like in all other businesses out there. And then eventually we started to decide we needed to move, you know, in a different direction. And by that time, as all of our contemporaries here on the call know, we were contacted by customers and our ISO registrar, perhaps, or API, saying, hey, we want to start doing remote audits. So we followed suit with that. And in fact, James Bennett at staff did a great job in investigating all of the requirements associated with those. There's actual standards out there that govern all this, which was news to me. But nonetheless, we went back through our entire program and tweaked it where we needed to. And basically what we have now, it's in a remote audit first choice, unless the client actually specifies an on-site audit. So, and this type of audit, because it's a paper audit, it very much lends itself to this quite easily. And the big benefit here is that'll significantly reduce costs. I mean, we're talking probably half of the cost is going to be just travel for an on-site audit. So I think it's going to work quite well.
So you're saying that this type of process where the remote is going to be the first choice will likely stay after COVID is, you know, gone. Yes. Somehow. Okay.
Right. The program is written such that it kind of defaults to a remote audit. And of course we're already doing that for the written practice portion anyway, but if the client, wants you to come on site, like my company, for example, we haven't stepped forward to be audited yet because we're very large. All of our records are kept in Houston, Texas for a global organization. And we have a lot, and because it's an older system, we've got a lot of hard copy files. Mm. So we can do a remote audit, and we've been doing, like our quality management system, we've done several remote audits that way, and it works fine. But when you're looking through personnel records that aren't all electronic, it might be a little bit cumbersome. So we'll probably request an on-site audit. But other companies may choose not to do that, particularly small ones where they may only have 10, 15, 20, 50 employees.
Yeah, that makes sense. So at ndtnow.com, we get a lot of feedback from folks. And sometimes it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but they just contact us anyway. And we did receive some feedback from some of our listeners and readers that they see this as just another way for ASNT to make money. So I wanted to see if you had any response to people who are thinking that.
Well, it is true. AS&T will make some money off of this. How much remains to be seen, but it is fulfilling, I think, an important role. As you started off the call, and that was the first thing we talked about, was there is an ample amount of examples of abuse out there, both in just the lack of an implemented program, to the lack of any type of level 3 oversight in that program, to flat out falsified records, whether it's intentional or not. And I think this is a way for companies to separate themselves a bit. So I think it's a valuable service for not only the NDT service providers out there, but for their customers. I mean, let's face it, virtually every standards organization out there that has some sort of NDT associated with it specifies our documents to qualify personnel to do the work required by those documents. And so this, I think, goes a long way towards bolstering that. you basically have two types of NDT certification out there. You've got, you know, what's called central certification, which is done by a certification body, which is independent of the employer, or you have an employer-based system. And I think this is a way to raise the bar and help get everybody on the same page.
Great, great. So, I mean, with that said, if companies choose not to participate in the program, do you believe it will hurt their business?
It may. I don't think this is going to take off domestically immediately. I think we'll have more inquiries internationally, because that's just the international folks seem to gravitate towards these things quite well. You know, everybody wants to have that certificate. Eventually, I'd like to see AS&T pursue some standards organizations to have this actually specified in external standards as an option. So it could potentially hurt their business. It could also help their business.
Right, right. I mean, having that certificate would be sort of set them apart from other folks. And it's not that cost prohibitive, is that correct?
I don't think it is. I mean, I don't know what the exact numbers are. That's not my responsibility. But you know, again, the auditor, the individual auditors, which are mostly will be contract auditors once we get up and going with this. I mean, they'll be making the bulk of the money here. The societies will get a stipend, obviously, to handle the administrative end of things and to pay for the staff that's doing that. But the money will really be going to the auditor. But not having to travel, I mean, that's going to be at least half the cost. So I think it's cheap insurance, if you ask me.
Agreed. And certainly, I guess that's a good thing that happened with COVID, right? So it pushed that remote auditing process. It pushed a lot of remote things where people are now saving money from not having to travel quite as much.
Right. And the other thing I think it does, just, you know, to tout AS&T here just a little bit. And I know you're in NDTMA, but AS&T started personnel certification back in the 60s. So who better to police it? I think it's just a natural evolution of where we've come.
For sure. And I think if it pushes the industry forward and makes that personnel certification, you know, employer-based certification more robust, more reliable, then certainly I think people will welcome it as something that will improve the industry and improve, you know, the overall safety.
I think the upside here is very good. Very good.
And is there going to be an evaluation of the program in a 3-year period to see sort of how is it doing? Has it caught on? Are there things that you need to change? What is the plan for that?
Well, overall, I don't know. The committee, we have a program document, which is published. It's on AS&T's website. And one of the requirements in the program document is that the volunteer committee that I currently chair will audit the program annually, which would be a physical audit, probably at AS&T's headquarters. And now that would be for compliance to the program document and the various procedures that we've written. In terms of the revenue aspects and is it profitable or is it costing the society money, those types of questions would have to be answered another way. But I suspect that probably like any of their programs that they do some sort of a review on this stuff periodically. We don't want to lose or have it cost the society money per se.
Oh, for sure. And is there on the website, is there a way for people to give feedback on the program? Just curious.
Yeah, I'll bet that there is. The program document should be on the public side of the website. You wouldn't even need to, you know, as a member to log in to get that. And I think that there's a general place to send feedback back, whether it be to the president of the society or to the ED or maybe even to this committee specifically.
Yeah, actually, I'm seeing on the website, it says, if you don't see the answer to your specific questions, feel free to email ASNT at ebc@asnt.org. So there's a specific email address just for this program. So is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners about the program or anything else you want to add?
Well, I think we've covered it pretty well. I'm very excited about it. I'm anxious for COVID to be over, right? So we can all get on with our lives, hopefully in a normal way. And hopefully this is a big part of it in terms of our professional lives. And I think it's going to add a lot to the industry and help lift everything up. I think it's a good thing here. I think this is really going to have a benefit to our industry and the individuals that work in it.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. We really appreciate you being able to sit down with us and talk a little bit more about this. I know a lot of our listeners had questions about what this meant for the industry, and hopefully this clears it all up. And if you guys do have any further comments, feel free to email us at ndtnow@we-ndt.com. And we'll be sure to get those answered for you. Maybe we'll do a follow-up podcast here. And thank you again all for listening. Remember, we've got GAIN here every month at ndtnow.com, brought to you by Surehand. Let good jobs find you. Learn more at surehand.com. And thanks again for joining us, Mike.
Thanks, Mary Beth.